What a time, what a warm and wondrous time. So sweet a shining moment in the sun. Oh, what a time, was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done, the moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go?
Time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
It's WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is Jake Koronik with you, along with Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director. And we have a really great show for you today. All kinds of news and views about Dearborn and the surrounding area. And, of course, that includes Henry Ford Community College, too. And we have some special guests in the studio here. Well, we just got done having special guests in the studio. There's one special guest after another here at WHFR. And all related to local things that matter to you most. Oh, yeah, they do, because they're right next door. That's the usual story. Anyway, in the studio, we have folks from Cleary University, and I'm going to let Dennis start up the questions and talk to these folks.
Thank you very much, Jay. We are in studio with Dave Castlegrant. He is the dean, the dean of the College of Management at Cleary University. We welcome you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
The main thing I want to focus on, we have we're developing a new agreement, we being Henry Ford Community College with Cleary University, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that agreement and some of the benefits, because to me it sounds like, at first I thought, well, this could really save students money, but there seems to be a little bit more involved, too. Please tell me a little bit about this.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, it's good to be back at Henry Ford Community College. One of the first teaching assignments I had with Cleary University was to be a coordinator for a group of our, at the time, accelerated degree students at the Dearborn Heights campus. So it's nice to be back here after all these years, and we've enjoyed our relationship with Henry Ford Community College over the years. The new program that we are launching actually this spring is our Applied BBA program, and the Applied BBA curriculum is it's designed to provide the non-business student with a business degree. So, for example, if a student is in the healthcare field, radiologist, alternative energy, electricians, welders, arts, sciences, it doesn't really matter. Once they are completed with that associate's degree, and they take an additional 30 credits of courses here at Henry Ford Community College.
So that's important. It would be physically at the college?
Absolutely.
At the college rates?
Yes, at the community, the 30 extra credits that they take at Henry Ford Community College will be at the Henry Ford's college rates, absolutely.
So, okay, well, which is, as we know, can be a substantial saving, sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Once they facilitate that associate's degree and those extra 30 credits, they can then come to the our Cleary University Applied BBA program here, which will be offered at Henry Ford Community College. You take the last 56 credits with us, and at the end of that time, you've got your BBA.
And is it 56 quarter?
Yes, it's 56 quarter. It's 56 quarter credits. Yeah, actually,
which are equal to another what it would be maybe 30.
About approximately 30 credits. Absolutely,
semester credit hours.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Now so. What is the advantage of having a business degree after I had my degree in theater or telecom?
Well, you know, it's we're in the age of specialization in terms of career path that folks are following. But you know, I subscribe to an old mentor of mine who once said that all business is show business, and you know, you've got to have a business background in order to maneuver the waters of your career path. I think that. Having a business background will enable you to really sustain your employability in these very tough economic times.
In the programs, I'm looking at the program overview right now for the Applied BBA curriculum, Applied Business Management, Applied Yes. Entrepreneurship, Applied Healthcare Management, and then Sustainability Management.
Yes.
And again, it doesn't necessarily matter what they take
in the
first couple of years here?
Not at all, not in the least. I mean, we think that we have a program for anyone. Those that are directly interested in perhaps going into business or where they'll be working for a company and want to get some skill sets to better manage people, to better manage business affairs, obviously they would take our BBA in business management program. If they have a desire to open up their own business, then obviously they would want that entrepreneur track. And, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about, you know, going to Henry Ford Community College with so many career paths that you can get with that associate's degree. You can basically put yourself into business with the skills that you learn here. And taking the entrepreneurship program will give you those technical business skills to get that business off the ground, and also to weather the storms of an entrepreneur. It's a very tough road to be an entrepreneur, but you know, entrepreneurism is very much a critical component for rebuilding the U.S. economy. It really is.
Absolutely. And then I know that you know the other two, the healthcare and the sustainability management. That's a rather kind of a new area. It's
yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, sustainability management is that's green business, green business strategies. It's going to be part of the new economy as we get into more alternative fuels, alternative energy, things of this nature. But even for existing businesses, what our sustainability program teaches the student is they teach them with an existing business, how can we reduce the environmental footprint that the business has? You know, what can we do in terms of changing our heating, the way we heat the building, the way we cool the building, the way we light the building, and the students will be exposed to these types of really real-time, real-life sustainability practices that are happening in any existing business today, whether it's a big business or a small business.
Okay. Jay, you had a question?
Well, I just wanted to know how students here on campus, obviously they can find out more information through our admissions office. Probably they can go to the Cleary University website.
Yes, they can.
Okay. What's that transfer situation like? They have to talk to a counselor here and or at Cleary if they decide to go the applied business degree Cleary University? program? Mm-hmm. It must be relatively simple, but I assume there's another application
go to our website at www.cleary.edu, and they can fill out an online application right there. If they do, there's a $25 fee, and that fee will be waived. They'll be given a code at the time of submitting that application online, and that fee will be waived. We do try to make it a very easy handoff from the mm-hmm. Henry Ford counselor to our counselors and advisors at Cleary University. We have a very good working relationship with them.
And I was playing with the computer here in the studio. I hope we identified the fact that Cleary University is relatively nearby. Ann Arbor area.
Plymouth Road in Ann Arbor and right. on Grand River in Howell, Michigan.
So and some of that additional work would be done at the campus there, but some of it's online too.
Yeah, well, it's
some of it's here at Henry Ford Community College.
Yeah, actually, this applied BBA program is actually designed specifically for Henry Ford Community College's students, and it would actually be run here at Henry Ford.
Oh, great!
So it would be at the space that we're going to be operating out of is at the Dearborn Heights campus.
Okay, yeah, well, that's right nearby.
Right, certainly.
If they can make it to this campus and they can complete their requirements here, it's just. The same place, but a different quality of instruction. Let's define, if we didn't already, what applied means. The applied, and that's really special. It's sort of cooperative work study in the field, isn't it?
Well, it's Cleary University has been around since 1883, and we've always been an institution of applied business studies. We like to brag that our students, when they graduate, they can actually do things. They can actually, they're not going to.
It should be, but still.
Yeah, and a lot of that we go back to the fact that we really have a great group of instructors who are real-life practitioners in the fields that they're teaching. So if you're taking a class for healthcare management, you're being taught by an administrator who's working in healthcare. So if you're taking a law class, a business law class, you're being taught by a practicing attorney in the state of Michigan. So we're very much focused on that. Even some of our full-time faculty are entrepreneurs in their own right, and they have their own small businesses that they're running. So our role is to always bring real-life business application into the classroom and have the students practice that in the classroom as well.
Well, you always want to learn with somebody that has actually done something.
Yes.
This is Dave Castle Grant.
Yes.
From Cleary University.
Yes.
Thank you so much. So I have a application checklist here, and I want to tell people a contact admissions number. If I can, I can give this.
Please.
800. It's 1-800-686-1883. That's 800-686-1883. Or apply online at cleary.edu. That's CLEARY.edu. It says here you complete the transcript release form, and then you have to speak with them, obviously somebody
yes.
about your academic plan.
Yeah, and somebody will actually, once we get their information, somebody will call them relatively quickly and get the ball rolling.
And the admissions requirements, you have to have an associate degree or equivalent. So if I have my 60 credits mm-hmm. that I could have graduated, I just chose to transfer instead, that's okay.
That's okay, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. 2.3 grade point average?
Yes.
Okay. And then, like you said, the application fee, which is waived if you're from a mm-hmm. college like ours with
yes.
an articulation agreement.
Yes, and one of the other unique things about Cleary University is, when you look at the price per credit hour, the books are included in that, and the books are delivered right to the person's home or their place of business.
Okay, yeah, that was something else that we brought up, that you don't have to stand in line at the
right,
bookstore
exactly.
and kind of wiggle your way around. It's mm-hmm. right to your door. Well, I thank you so much to Dave Castle Grant. Thank you. Thank you for the information. This goes into effect, you said, next month?
Yeah, actually, we're hoping to run some classes here starting in March, March-April session if we can. So that would be great.
So like the final 8 weeks?
Well, they're in the quarterly system.
Yeah,
remember,
that's right.
So.
Yeah, good point. Okay.
So it's about 10 to 12 weeks for a semester?
About 12 weeks, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So. Yep, okay. Plenty of time to do that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in. Dean Dave Castle Grant, is it?
Yes.
Yes, and just another example, folks, in the community, how Henry Ford Community College is trying to give you educational choices and help your continuing education without necessarily going away from home, even. So giving choices to you for the four-year degrees. Some very innovative programs. I love the idea of applied studies. Many years ago, here's a story about some of the competition, U of M Dearborn. I was considering going there myself for the last 2 years. They were just a senior college at the time, back in the last millennium.
Yeah.
And they were, but all of their programs were co-op studies. So you would do some classes on campus, but then you'd have a whole semester actually in the workplace, and everything was tied to that sort of practical, demonstrated knowledge.
That's awesome.
And then you'd come back and evaluate and go back out, and so that was, but they changed, so I didn't go there. So, but my daughter went there, though, and went to ed school, and that was a lot of co-op experience, too. But thank you very much for starting the program. I don't know if you guys made the initial call to Henry Ford or vice versa, but we're always interested in giving people a wide range of choices for innovative programs to actually make a difference in the world. So thank you for being partners with Henry Ford Community College.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the time to talk about Cleary University. Thanks
awesome.
Again.
Thanks, Dave.
Again, the website is Cleary.
www.cleary.edu.
.edu. That's pretty simple. That's C-L-E-A-R-Y. Okay. Thanks very much. We're going to continue on the new WHFR Journal. Here's some comments from Jim Hightower, always challenging your thinking, and we'll be back with more local news and views.
Here's a case of good news oozing out of bad news, and vice versa. The bad news is that Hostess Brands has sunk into bankruptcy. It couldn't stay afloat with the $860 million debt piled onto it when a group of Wall Street speculators took over the 82-year-old company. The good news, though, is that devoted customers can still get their daily fix of five kinds of sugar, partially hydrogenated oil, polysorbate 60, artificial flavors, and yellow dye number 5. Those are a few of the ingredients in Hostess Twinkies. When top executives filed for Chapter 11 in January, they assured an anxious nation that the corporation would keep chugging out Twinkies, Ho-Hos, Ding-Dongs, and its other caloric delights while they deal with a few legal details to restructure Hostess. Oh, goody! But wait, those details constitute the bad news flowing out of the good news. The CEO says that to become, quote, a highly competitive company that provides secure employment for our employees, Hostess must make those employees less secure by busting their pensions, cutting their medical benefits, and abrogating their labor contracts. Does this Twinkie in chief even understand how twisted his logic is? Apparently not, for he also asserts that one of the, quote, tremendous inherent strengths that Hostess can build on to become a viable company is a talented and experienced workforce. This is Jim Hightower saying, thanks for the compliment, Chief, but I'm guessing your workforce would prefer a decent pension. Without that, your words are as empty as the calories in a ding-dong. Meanwhile, the union workers who literally deliver the goods for the company point out that they've already made concessions, and it's time for the richly paid corporate executives and profiteering speculators who loaded Hostess with all that debt to stop sucking all the cream out of the Twinkies.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
You've been listening to Jim Hightower's report, pre-recorded, at WHFR.FM, the station making waves with the kind of news and information and music that you can't get on any other station in the Detroit area. And do you thank our friends from Cleary University for coming by and talking about their exciting new transfer program related to allow our own students to easily move into a program for a bachelor's degree right here in Dearborn, without moving away at all or going away to school, saving a lot of those costs, as long as your parents or family can stand to keep having you live at home. And we hope you have that wonderful relationship that makes that possible, of course. Looking at the newspapers from the Dearborn Press and Guide, the Times Herald, and, of course, we always talk about some stories coming from Patch.com, too. That's an online news service that you can get for free, and it's a great adjunct to the papers. As I pointed out, the newspapers in Dearborn, even though they have decreased their number of full-time reporters and the amount of investigative reporting they can do, therefore, is much smaller, and just publishing press releases doesn't seem to make much sense to me, but it's something. But they do some of that. Patch.com is a good supplement because the stories that are in Press and Guide and Times Herald are usually simply longer. They have more information, and they can get more extensive quotes and so on. But all of that is important as an adjunct to listening to this show, of course. Dearborn Schools are adding librarians, it says in the Sunday edition of Press and Guide, Sunday, January 29th. Did I mention today was February the 3rd? Happy February, Dennis. Okay, his mic isn't on, but there he is.
It's better when my mic's on. It's better radio.
Yes, I think so. Joe was having some trouble with that last hour. But
February 3rd, yes.
Yes.
And go ahead.
Time is going. Well, the point is that they're adding librarians. They're just bringing a few back. And this is because, you know, halfway through last year approximately, the state discovered that they had a surplus of money. And even though they had cut funding per pupil to the K-12 systems, they had some money to give back. Now, they still currently have a big fund balance in the general fund, and they could still give more money back to the schools. But the point is they made available $1.9 million for this year's budget back to the Dearborn Public Schools. And that was great. Thank you very much, although that's doesn't counter the $400 per person that they lost this year. So it's a net loss. But nonetheless, in consultation with several groups in the community, the district school administration talked to everybody, including the Dearborn Federation of Teachers, and they felt the best use of the money is to bring back media specialists, which I should point out is more than just being a librarian.
Absolutely.
Although media specialists deal with the individual library facilities at the schools. And, of course, we want our students to be able to read more and have access to the books. And, again, usually it's not just Harry Potter books there. I mean, it's classic books of science and literature, the basics of education, as much as the schools can manage. And so they're bringing back, they will have, and this is not much, 4.5, you know, how can you bring back half of employee? I guess one very short person.
Right.
Okay.
Somebody under 12.
Yeah. Anyway, they will now have, and this is, in a way, this is awful, I think, but they will have a total district-wide in K-12 of 12.5 media specialists, including the 4.5 that they're bringing back.
Because that one just isn't that good.
No, but they had cut from 16. We previously had 16. There's 16 full-time positions.
Right.
And we'd lost almost half of them. And with, of course, the budget situation for the Dearborn Public Libraries, closing one and perhaps closing more, even with the extra millage coming in that was approved this year, who knows how many public libraries will be left in Dearborn next year. Nonetheless, it's still something. So approximately, I would guess, one or half person per building to help manage the resources, which I assume are a lot more than just books. There's probably computer systems and digital information, and we need someone who is especially trained and savvy in that. And I've said this in the past, a lot of people don't realize that to be a librarian anywhere, it's a master's degree level.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay? You've got to know a lot about all kinds of resources and how to acquire them and how to update them and so on before you can be an effective media resource teacher. Whereas teachers, no disrespect here, you can start off with a teaching degree with just a bachelor's degree. It's true if you want to stay a teacher in Michigan, you have to renew that, so you probably have to go for the master's and go beyond every 5 years. I know my daughter has to get an additional number of hours. I can't remember how many, and in order to stay current, it's actually required in the state of Michigan. So, I mean, so a public school teacher with a bachelor's degree starting out, and many of them need a master's or a doctorate in order to get that first job, nonetheless. But starting out, they still wind up with something, you know, like a master's degree or a doctorate degree hours after about 10 or 12 years, certainly after 15 years in service to the public in the educational systems. So that's great, but do not misunderstand. It's, despite the title, librarians. It's not just librarians. The official title is media specialist, and that's cutting edge of what's needed for information flow to our students to make a good education possible for them. And with decreased spending and availability in the public libraries, and that's forecast into the future, of course, too, the school libraries are crucial, essential to a good education. So good for them. But it's not like adding librarians. It's bringing a few back, but not even bringing back all of them that were there last year, which was 16. So we're still down 3.5 full-time media specialists from even last year. And they decided this was the top priority. Good for them. Keep that education flowing. Keep the materials updated and accessible at these schools. In my daughter's own school in Southfield, it's really sad. They don't have the money to open up their computer lab. They have computers, and they could do special programs for classes that would go in and use them, and you know, for some class sessions. They're just sitting vacant. The computers are getting kind of old now. Nobody there to maintain them. My daughter, even this is Southfield, though, public schools. My daughter started a program of maintenance and upgrades with her seventh grade students. They were like the nerd herd, the techies that would swoop in and help keep the labs running. Well, they weren't union.
No.
So a suit was filed.
Seriously?
They had to kick them out, so the labs can't happen now for the whole school. Yes.
That is unbelievable.
You can't have the students maintaining the computer labs.
Talk about applied learning,
right? And I understand it's taking away jobs of full-time professionals.
But they're not doing it, right?
Well, the district in Southfield didn't have the money
right.
to have them do it.
That's
like
what I'm saying.
The media specialist, if you will, sure. to keep those lab goings, they said they couldn't afford. And so my daughter had, and this was working for a year until the suit was filed by the union.
Interesting.
And I understand. I think a mature full-time person can do more than seventh graders, but sometimes in these tech fields, that's not always the case. And it was great learning for the students.
Oh,
they felt
gosh.
Great at helping the teachers and helping their other students in the other classrooms by keeping the machines running. And
Jay, with all the negative stories that I've heard from mm-hmm. you know from your daughter through you, this was a positive one.
Well, it was until they stopped it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just the legality or
I guess
union shop or whatever. Although I'm in favor of union shops against right to work, even though right to work sounds like a wonderful thing, doesn't it? It's one of those things like the Patriot Act. If you look into it, there's nothing patriotic about the Patriot
right.
Act if you believe in basic American freedoms. It takes those away from us. Right to work says you can work there without joining the union, but that destroys the union. It destroys the voice of the employees eventually.
Right.
Eventually, not always, but eventually it usually does. And you got to study labor union history and unions in history to see that it has not been a corrosive influence on business. It's been a way to give equity and fairness and a voice to the employees. Otherwise, they just wouldn't have one. They just wouldn't have one, folks. And I know, yes, you should be allowed to work at a place even if a union is already bargaining, but then you're getting the union benefits and the contract for free without paying the dues. Yeah, you're included because you're part of the workforce. You're getting the benefits of the better pay without having to pay any union dues, and eventually that will kill the union. So I'm just saying that sometimes the title of these different concepts, you know, even right to life, is actually against freedom of choice. So these are not easy issues. Some people will come down on one side and the other, but the basic laws should not be so biased by the nature of their titles of the concept. Anyway, that's what we try to do here. So good for the Dearborn Schools, and that was from the Sunday Press and Guide. There's also a story that graduation requirements may ease remedial need, and that's in the Sunday Press and Guide. And there was actually presentations by University of Michigan Dearborn and HFCC to the Dearborn Board of Ed, indicating that even though it's pretty new to have these new degree requirements for graduates of Michigan high schools, a little bit of change has happened in the last year, and it may not be a trend, but at both U of MD and Henry Ford Community College, the students coming from local high schools, Dearborn and others, by golly, seem to be a little better at reading and a little better at math, a little better prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe those stronger, more strict graduation requirements have something to do with that. We'll have to wait and see.
Right.
That was the intention. That was the hope. You know, Jennifer Granholm and others in the Michigan Higher Ed Commission proposed those and adopted them. Legislature adopted them, and it did cost the high schools more money to set them up. It should allow more people to be better prepared for college. Because, folks, hey, I'll tell you, here at Henry Ford Community College, we have such a high percentage of sections, like in the English department, I think we have more sections of remedial English that have to go back even to fourth grade level.
You know,
students coming out of a high school degree in the local area, they're only prepared for reading and writing at the fourth grade level. Yeah. They've got to be brought up 8 years in their reading and writing ability before they can even take the first college level writing class.
But we have such a unique situation here because of the number of, I mean, there are people that don't even come to this country until they're that age. Mm-hmm. So they don't, mm-hmm. and they don't speak a lot of English. So no, it is a really, it's an interesting There's dynamic.
A number of reasons. It's not just the high school's fault, but.
Oh, absolutely not.
I'd say mostly it is, but that's, you know, the opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College.
I don't know what's next on your list. I just wanted to make what seems like a natural segue. I think I saw that you had something regarding the schools will consider allowing advertising. And
yes.
I know that was actually in the Times Herald.
That's so in both Times Herald and Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, February 1st.
Yep. In the we're talking about money and librarians and the money going in. And they're finally looking at advertising. And you know, we had the mayor on last year, and he had said he brought it up. I think we talked about it. Advertising on buses with a number of people, and they're doing this. And I just look at this as such an awesome way to get the community to fit some of the bill, and everybody wins because they're getting exposure. You and I talked about it. It has to be tasteful. It has to be appropriate.
Yeah.
A lot of them are sports-related, too.
Yeah, the title in the Press and Guide story done by Katie Herrick over there, who is our education writer at Press and Guide here, indicates the picture. Well, and it's both are tentative, but Dearborn Schools take cautious approach to advertising issue. And even in Times Herald, it says on the headlines, top of the page there, schools consider allowing advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, if you read the stories, they said, yeah, we'll do it. We can do advertising back in 2005. That was approved by the Dearborn Board of Ed back in 2005. But that was just conceptually. They haven't done anything since then in 6 years. So
now
they've set up a committee of three people inside the board. So three board members are a small committee. They're going to take maybe the next year to review some other specific details of when and where. And, of course, we have to do it appropriately. I mean, I know that out there in the real world, a lot of people are eating fast food, things that are not as healthy as anybody who has the knowledge realizes as other food choices. Okay? So in the schools, we should not, even right now, I don't know, they still have vending machines for Coca-Cola or something?
They do.
They should not do that. Okay? And yet they're getting a lot of money from those vending machines. Right across from WHFR here, Henry Ford Community College and the Student Center, we have a whole bank of vending machines. Not all of them have unhealthy food choices. But I'd say 80% of the choices are technically bad, if you know anything about nutrition, that no one in their right mind, if they want to do something healthy, should make those choices. But it's, you know, it's soda pop, empty calories. Even the diet drinks are not good for you, folks. But we do have a healthy water machine where you can fill up your refillable bottle for only 25 cents or something. And we have some other choices that are not quite as toxic. But, you know, that's just because the school is making a fortune on the kickbacks, I mean on the leasing fees, from the companies that put those machines in. And the companies maintain them, they take care of them, they fix them, and they keep them restocked at no extra charge. So it's only a win situation for the college budget. And it's tens of thousands of dollars a year. We at our other campus, too, out in Dearborn Heights, they have a bank of vending machines. Should it be here? No. I think the K-12...
what would be a good advertiser? What do you think? Because I'm racking my brain.
Most of these companies do not provide healthy food choices because they spoil too fast.
Right.
Okay? And
that's
you can't have spoiled food. It just doesn't store that well. And so if nobody does buy from the machine, and unfortunately, the kids, even coming out of high schools, they think that the healthy choices are the sort of things in those machines, and so they will buy them. But if we put the truly healthy choices in there, because of their conditioning in the radio and TV and the media and even from their high school experiences, they won't buy them, so the healthy food will spoil. So it takes a real educational effort, and I think in the K-12 level, to teach the kids what healthy choices really are, in spite of the fact they're going to lose money from the vending machine companies and others that are providing maybe food for the lunch programs. It's a push and shove, but this advertising issue brings up really the consistent choices and ethics of the district, of the educational administration in the district. And they may have to make some very tough choices here, pro and con advertising, pro and con vending machines.
Right.
But it has to be consistent, and it also has to get the attention of the students, maybe even through some curriculum changes in the classroom, to let the students know why we're only having healthy food and not the food that you think is healthy from radio and TV ads. It's more than just food, though, of course.
No, but that's a really that's a really profound thing to say, because you're right. There is a trickle down. Okay,
profound. I think it's only obvious. I don't think it's profound.
Oh, well, to you. Okay. No, but seriously, you're right. This is far-reaching, but and they have a lot of hard decisions to make. But good for them. This is a great way. Mm-hmm. They say they can raise as much as $100,000 a year doing this.
I'm sure they could.
How many librarians is that? Maybe we can get those 2.5 more. You know, I don't know what they make, but
For example, the district already receives a deal on Coke products for allowing those machines in high schools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get away from that. Amy Blackburn mentioned. So it's Amy, and I think it's Jim Schoolmaster,
mm-hmm.
and someone else who's the third person on that group that's going to be looking at this. And I think they're going to have a tough choice. Okay, the board policy committee is trustees Pamela Adams, Hussein Berry, and James Schoolmaster. So Amy's not on the group.
Right.
So they have a tough group of choices, but I hope they do the ethical things and make the tough ethical choices. There are a lot of healthy and community service oriented people that can be.
You know, that's why it's taken so long. These are tough choices.
Can't have the name recognition in the schools. For example, it looks like here, defibrillator machines.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has a heart attack.
Right. That's important.
The machines actually have the logo of the company that sponsored them.
Oh.
And,
okay.
Yeah. So- yeah. And I don't know who that, it doesn't say in the story who that company is that donated the defibrillator machines, which is really a health advantage to have them there, of course. But I assume it's not a, you know, an alcohol beverage company something like that.
Right. So you're saying it's the company, not a sponsor of the equipment.
The company logo is there.
Sure, but that's
on that machine.
Yeah, but that's common.
And it should be okay. I mean, maybe it's just a business in Dearborn or whatever, and, you know, heating, cooling, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, but we use a Mac. Their logo's on that. I guess, is it a little bit more?
I don't know. Okay. I mean, there's some really tough choices. It won't be an easy decision, and obviously it hasn't been an easy decision. You know, slam dunk, as they say in sports, because we've had the okay to go ahead and start advertising. Yeah, for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So okay.
Now they're going to be cautious and fine, but at least, yes, they can get some money from that. And I think it has to be done with some educational and ethical soundness to it, that it can't just be willy-nilly, and I'm even against their approval of the Coke machines, okay? So
right.
Even though I know how much money that brings in, and that's always good to have money coming in, but I think you're going to have to make some alternative choices there. There's some things about sports. I know it's a Super Bowl weekend coming up.
Sure is.
I don't know. Let's move on, though, before we get to that.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting. The Dearborn Times-Herald, which is more a lot of stories about downriver, the nearby area, rather than, although you sometimes put a Dearborn story on the front page, but they sort of have a whole downriver area focus, and that's good.
Their website is Downriver Sunday Times, so yeah, you're right. It's really focused.
Because Dearborn is not the end-all and be-all of the world, much less downriver. I'm sorry to say that. Yeah, but so it's kind of interesting. In Wyandotte, the people who are on the Art Fair Commission, you know, Wyandotte Art Fair is a big publicity thing. Every mm-hmm. summer it's 4 days, isn't it, at least?
Wonderful.
Outdoor artists and also getting people to see what's in you know, downtown Wyandotte, and the other, the vendors there also benefit from the people wandering around. So that's, in fact, I think it's the second largest attendance in terms of people that show up and wander around and come to the Wyandotte Art Fair, next to the Ann Arbor Art Fair.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's a difference in terms of the level, the quality of the artist, as people say, but certainly you can say that the art that's shown at the Dearborn, at the Wyandotte Art Fair is reasonably priced, okay?
Yeah.
Could certainly say that. And so if you can't afford some of the excellent work in Ann Arbor, there's some excellent work at a lower price available from local artists in Wyandotte. Guess what? The whole commission just up and resigned.
Why?
All seven of them. Well, it looks like, and this is not a clear story here, but if you take a look at the Times Herald on and you look at the story yourself, maybe you can figure it out more than I can.
I did not see that one.
It's on 2A. And apparently there was a special meeting January 17th in which councilors, that would be council members of the city of Wyandotte, asked questions about the spending of the commission. Apparently they had their own budget, with profits somehow from the art fair, I guess. And they bought from the Wyandotte Art Fair Commission's budget computers for the Wyandotte Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the councilors, which I think is really a terrible name for council persons, okay, because they're not really counseling. In fact, it's spelled slightly different, folks, okay. But the members, and I don't know if it was all the people from the Wyandotte City Council, but the council members, the council persons from the Wyandotte Council who did attend said, shouldn't have done that. Those computers could have been made, could have been bought with drug forfeiture funds. You know, when they do a bust on a drug house or something, I guess, there's not only drugs, which I don't think the city resells.
No, they
just try to dispose of those somehow.
I think they destroy
somehow.
It properly, sure.
Sell it on the street for a discount. No, yeah. Certainly not. But they also get the excess money that the drug dealers or the crooks or, I don't know, maybe it was a numbers racket or something.
Sure,
that
they confiscate
the money from that illegal activity. And they said, shame on you for buying the computers for the police department. Well, I guess.
But it never even says that, does it? It just says that they resigned after the meeting where they found this
stuff.
They
resigned, out. I think, because they thought they did a good thing, probably.
Right.
And I would think if the police department needed computers, somebody should pay for them.
Right.
Somebody should get them. Were they unnecessary? So, there's a bigger story behind the scenes here about petty politics or whatever. Oh, shame on you. We would have bought it for them. Well, it's not like you did something that was bad.
Right.
Like buying drugs or improving your own personal homes or buying a car for yourself out of public funds. But apparently they felt so hurt at that criticism, and it was just a criticism. They weren't forced to resign, but they all did. Well, of course, so this story is basically saying that the art fair will continue. The positions are going to be filled. But Harry Sisco, was an interesting name in the Dearborn community.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, he was running along with one of the Coney Island magnates. I forget his name, but they were co-partners in a classy restaurant in West Dearborn.
Really?
Which was going to feature blues, but in a very upscale, classy way. Previously, Harry Sisco had a blues-only venue down in Taylor.
Was he ever part of that, Bob and Harry's?
Yes.
That was it? Was it Bob?
No, whoever the Coney Island guy was.
Something in Harry's, yeah.
Bill and Harry or whatever.
Yeah.
But, no, Harry Sisco found, after many years of trying to open this classier, bigger venue in Dearborn, he couldn't afford all the cost. And so he partnered with one of the owners of one of the Coney Island chains in Detroit. And, yes, it was called something in Harry's, finally. But anyway, that didn't work out, and they closed that, and it's now maybe Crave. I don't know what the facility is. Is the Crave restaurant now in that same location?
It could be.
Whatever. So Harry, apparently, maybe he lives in Wyandotte, but he is now a councilor, in Wyandotte, and he and the Downtown Development Authority, since they only have one downtown area that's just Okay. They're going to act as the administrative arm of the event to keep it going. And he's saying, what we're here to say is thank you to all the people on the Festival Commission for all the years of service.
Yeah, you
even though they just all quit.
You just quit on us.
Because you insulted them by criticizing their purchase of computers for the police department there. We understand they don't want to be involved anymore. Yes, I guess you get that idea when they resigned. I guess that would they understand that. Uh-huh. But that does not mean that this is not going forward. So the good news here, folks, is DDA down there in Wyandotte, Executive Director Jennifer Kibbe, and the DDA will handle everyday tasks for the event. So the event's going to go on. Okay, and they're looking for 7 new people who won't spend any extra money from the art fair budget on computers for the police.
Right. Well, we don't know that they won't. They just haven't yet.
I don't know. Could it be a turf thing? Is that the council felt
embarrassed
because the police department needed computers and they didn't think of it first?
I would have loved a minute on that meeting.
I don't know what it was, but all 7 of them, poof, resigned. And I don't think they did anything wrong. It's true. If the police needed that and they had all this extra confiscated money, they could use it on anything they wanted to, I guess. Is that a criticism of the police department? Are they sitting on tens of thousands or millions of dollars that they haven't spent? What are they doing with that confiscated money?
Well,
I mean, it's not a full story here. I mean, if you're really an investigative reporter, you'd find out who was really right or wrong here. I don't think those commission members did anything wrong. If the police needed computers, they put the money out. That was money well spent for a public purpose. But is that a criticism there of the Wyandotte Police Department? Are they sitting on tens of thousands of dollars that they haven't spent? Or is it a criticism of the council for not seeing the need and putting general funds to that?
I don't know. It's not enough information.
Well, I'm just saying we ask these questions here, and maybe it's not relevant. But for all of you that enjoy the art fair in Wyandotte, it's a great promotional event for the city and the downtown businesses. It's going to go ahead no matter what. But something weird happened.
It'll be minus 7 people.
Yeah, minus the original 7, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I just thought that was one of those fun stories. Don't you love the fun stories tiffs?
I blew by that one, and then you bring it up, and it's actually a heck of a lot more interesting than.
Yeah. Okay. There is an editorial response in the Times-Herald via the Jackson Citizen-Patriot, of course. They wrote the editorial about a review of the State of the Union by Barack Obama. They actually said, even though these are conservative papers and editorials usually, they liked 3 of the ideas, he said. So that's not bad. 3 out of about 150 that he mentioned. Anyway, Gary Warrenchuk has appointed a special committee on ethics within the Wayne County Commission. I think, of course, because the commissioners wanted to take away the unethical aura that has come from that female person. I didn't follow in the news, but a big to-do is that she was criticized. She left. She got a big severance package. And then the chief executive, Fricano, of Wayne County, started getting criticized that he was really in favor of it. He set it up. So maybe he did something unethical. I don't know. Let that work out. But Warrenchuk, as the head of the commission, actually, a commissioner, but the head of the Wayne County Commission, they've now set up a special committee to try to resolve or investigate things like that in the future. And where you had a press release about, I've got it here. Okay. George DeRaney, our Democratic representative from this area to Lansing, along with a Diane Slavens, Democrat from Canton, have introduced an ethics and campaign finance reform package to close the revolving door between the public and private sectors and to provide citizens with greater transparency and accountability from elected and appointed officials. This is needed so much in Congress in Washington, D.C., but and it's identified here. I don't think it made it to the stories because this is their press release that came from the probably from the Durrani office just yesterday, February 2nd. So you see these stories in Press and Guide and or the Times-Herald next week, or you can go to Durrani's website, I'm sure, to look at this. And it's just a bill, but absolutely, we need campaign finance reform and ethics in regarding to campaigns and campaign finance desperately. The laws we have are not enough in that regard, and I won't go into the details there. You can find out more, and you'll read the stories in the paper next week, but we give these late-breaking things. I thought, Dennis, from the Wednesday Press and Guide, it was kind of interesting. Here's another controversial thing that is that if you remember, Dennis, a year or so ago, there was a group, a Christian pastor, George Saig, S-A-I-E-G, who his group was handing out leaflets, obviously somewhat criticizing Muslims and Arab Americans in general, just by the fact of passing out these leaflets, at the Arab International Festival in Dearborn. Dearborn felt that you can't leaflet in right. that in that situation. Even though it was a public event, it was on, you know, Dearborn streets and so on. And so they prevented that. They stopped the leafleting from happening. And, well, guess what? They lost the case and have to pay $100,000.
Can you believe that?
Now, not to Pastor Saig,
no,
but to pay his legal fees. That was the ruling of the court. In other words, boy, these lawyers are really coming out. What is it, $400,000 to the lawyers of Pucci?
Almost $500,000, yeah.
Okay. And that's just part of the settlement against Judge Summers, which he is still kind of appealing, I think, but has already had his wages garnished partially, as we indicated last week. But now another suit was found against the city of Dearborn for restricting the leafleting at the Arab International Festival.
They found that the city infringed on Saig's free speech rights in 2009. Mm-hmm. And that was by instituting a policy. So it was the policy itself. That's why the city's on the hook. It was the policy.
And,
that was
and because the policy was inappropriate against freedom of speech, I guess, must have been the basis, as you said, for it. The pastor's not getting any money from this, but he did win the case
and got
his lawyers paid.
Yeah, but he's going to get a dollar.
Okay.
That's the the nominal damages.
I personally, and I know we love our Arab American community members, we're all part of the same community. I don't care if you're an Arab or a Muslim or not. I mean, we're all part of the same community working together. You can't restrict freedom of speech. And that was a very public event. I know it was on Warren there, but very public event. As long as people are civil and not causing trouble, not restricting people's passage or haranguing or making noise disturbance, they certainly had a right to be there, in my humble opinion. I didn't see the videos. I didn't see what the police did. Obviously, our court system felt that Dearborn was right. Okay, well, it didn't work out that way. Okay, so now we're out another $100,000, and we don't know who's finally going to have to really pay the $1.2 million settlement was a problem with who got fired in the Dearborn court system, in the 19th District Courts, which Dearborn thought it shouldn't have to pay for that adjudication against them. But it looks like they may have to, and that's why they start garnishing Judge Summers' pay, which he, of course, doesn't feel that he should have to pay. He did it as an administrator, maybe made a bad decision, but he was ministering for the city of Dearborn.
Do you know that this the pastor that we were just talking about, Saig, had been doing this successfully for like 4 years. And then when Haddad came on and became the police chief, he instituted this new policy. And so that's when Saig filed suit. So he had been doing it successfully. I think he had a precedent, I guess. If he'd been doing it for a few years, he didn't understand why he had to stop.
Well, I can understand the organizer of the Arab International Festival didn't want that possible controversy or conflict that might be raised by the leafleting.
Oh, absolutely.
But just like at Dearborn Homecoming, like we've had, since WHFR has been there for years, for the whole, you know, 3-day period, and we have seen some people loud, noisy, haranguing, disturbing the people at the festival. And it doesn't matter what their cause was. I could name a few of them. That doesn't matter. But they were real disturbances. And now the city of Dearborn has given them a sort of free speech area. But if they're going to go on bullhorns and intrude and upset or try to stop people on the street and throw things in their face or whatever, that's going too far. But these leafleters apparently were not in that situation, according to the ruling by the judge.
It was just there was a possibility. That's why Haddad instituted.
And I think we're all clear on the fact you can't stop free speech at a public event, even if it's a city-owned park or in front of a business, right in front of their sidewalk or where they're doing business. That's still a public venue.
Right.
And God bless freedom of speech. America has more of it than any other country in the world. but we keep trying to pass laws to not just restrict it, but in some cases eliminate it. So shame on some of our officials that do that. And that's why we need the courts, I guess, to work it out, the courts of last resort here. But shame on the people that pass the laws or come up with these additional restrictions, usually under political pressure.
Right, right.
From other groups. But
well, the real winners here are these attorneys.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. That's
So can he go back next year and distribute pamphlets again?
I guess so.
I guess so, too.
Okay.
Interesting.
Speaking of protest, and we should mention it, that the Arab American protest leader, not from this area, but he's going to speak here at Henry Ford Community College next week. Is it time for another campus connection, or it's a week from Tuesday?
A week from Tuesday,
yeah,
yes.
Okay. So Dennis is the host of that show.
The co-host.
Is, the second Tuesday of each month, not the first, from 1 to 2 p.m. And also available on our website archive. Just click on talk shows and look for the Tuesday forum. And the second Tuesday date, whatever that is, of the month, that's Campus Connection with Dennis and usually Lindsay, too.
Dennis and Lindsay.
Okay. Anyway, I thought it would be good to mention this because it's kind of interesting. It's a free speech issue, and we love free speech. Why? Because that's what we're doing, and we only got 6 minutes left to keep doing it this hour. But nonetheless, it's on page 12A. How fast can I turn here to 12A?
Pretty fast.
Okay, and this is I don't like this. The 12A is a separate section as if it's not as important, like you could throw it away. Some people I know get the papers, and they throw away every section but the first, and they say, well, if it's not in the first section, it's not important. Unfortunately, folks, the Press and Guide has been adding both some continuations of stories in the first and some very good extra stories in the two or three extra pages of this of another section, but it's still numbered Section A. Anyway, here's a story about who's going to speak here. His name is Osama, don't jump up and down here, Shabake, S-H-A-B-A-I-K, who will speak on behalf of the Irvine 11, a group of Arab-American student protesters, eight of whom were members of the Muslim Student Union. Not here, but out in California. That's right, University of California, Irvine campus. That's why they're called the Irvine 11. And the event here, in case you want to attend for free, to hear the speaker and hear their story, is next Thursday, February 9th, from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. in room L14 of the HFCC Liberal Arts Building. That's right in the center of our main campus here off of Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Very good thing. Let's find out the nature of the situation that happened. These people, part of the Muslim Student Union at the University of California, Irvine campus, did protest. They held a nonviolent act of civil obedience, though. Civil disobedience means you are disrupting.
Sure. It could be a sit-in, right?
And it was a speech by Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Michael Oren. And so they got up, and they stood up, and they spoke out. They criticized. They disturbed the speech of Israeli ambassador Michael Oren. Okay. And so what happened was kind of a swift police action. Because they'd been reprimanded by University of California Irvine officials already, and they can do that within the college, discipline students for being disrespectful and disruptive and so on. But then they got the laws coming down on them too, and they were convicted on September 23rd last year, sentenced to 3 years of probation, though, in community service, but it became a legal thing, and...
Still, the charge
surprise to them.
Disturbing the peace, or what was it?
Right. Yes, it was conspiracy to disturb a lawful meeting and the disturbance of a lawful meeting.
You know, and sometimes if that escalates, it goes to inciting a riot, and that's a huge charge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really serious.
But it's on their record as being convicted of a criminal of two criminal charges.
Wow.
And so, I don't know if you ask, well, Cornick, what do you think? Well, I don't know the whole story, and you can find out by attending this next Thursday here on the main campus, 11 a.m. in the Liberal Arts Building main campus auditorium. Not in the administrative building auditoriums, but on the main campus, Liberal Arts. So you can hear him speak, and here is the situation. Difficult call. Obviously, I'm in favor of hearing the real word directly from Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren. He should have been allowed to speak. I think they should have done leafleting. They should have had a right to have a table up front. and be given a chance to make their own speech afterwards. But to disrupt his speech, I think they were guilty of something there, and that was inappropriate. But they talk about civil disobedience, and that's a great essay by that name by Henry David Thoreau, great American,
yes,
great thinker. Sometimes you need to stand up to the terrible machines of government. Sometimes you don't, though. And so did they need to do that at this time or not? Okay.
That's, well, you know, and we'll find
always
out
a question.
That, but you get the impression, because the whoever's coming to speak is obviously the side of these... what is that?
Well, yeah, he's one of the Irvine 11.
Irvine 11, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I mean, is that you'll get that side. Well, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. And so we invite you to consider this always in a free society. We need to have expression of difficult and sometimes controversial ideas. We need them.
But we need fair and balanced, too.
But we need fair and balanced, and we need the right to allow those opinions to be expressed. People who do, just like Henry David Thoreau said, and I've taught his essay on civil disobedience many, many times. I love the way he expressed himself, is that sometimes you need to do civil disobedience. You need to be disruptive. If something terrible is happening, then there's no other options.
Right.
And you expect to get punished. You do. You expect. And so if one of their statements here is that they shouldn't have been given a criminal punishment, they should. It actually helps their cause to get more attention, to be punished in the criminal system.
True.
And that's what, if the situation demanded it, you should expect to have happen. Of course, you want to be nonviolent, you don't want to hurt anybody, but if you're disruptive and you get punished for it, that's the whole idea of civil disobedience. You should never expect to do disruption and not get punished for it. Why? Because nobody will find out. Nobody will know. So it's like the sort of the martyrdom idea.
Exactly.
A little bit without getting killed, of
right.
course, yourself.
Thankfully.
Right. So hopefully this gave them a bigger forum to talk about what I assume is the problem in the Middle East and what the Israelis have done and what the Arab groups have done there and Palestinians and so on. And is one group more right than the other? We always need to find out more information about that. And,
you know, the thing about this is also
keep an open mind for
Irvine 11.
They
also brought a lot more attention to the speaker whom they interrupted.
Right.
You know, and that's part of the trickle effect, too.
Yeah, it's intended. But so one of the things I don't think you'll hear him saying is, they shouldn't have given us any punishment. It's our freedom of speech. No. If you're going to be if you're going to be disruptive, if you're going to do civil disobedience, as they indicated they knew they were,
right,
then you will get punished.
Yeah, they planned that.
But you will also get more attention to your cause, and maybe that's a good trade-off, depending on where you are tonight, where you are on that issue. Okay. Unfortunately, it's the end of the time we have, Dennis, but we're waiting for the arrival of Joanne and Highway 61 to begin. This is WHFR Dearborn. Our podcast will probably get a one-minute late start because of the guests from the Dearborn Symphony performance from tonight. And, folks, if you want to support local music and classical music and pop music, I don't know if the people who are going to be spinning from the rafters and they're going to set off some sort of fire display or fireworks inside the center, hope they turned off their fire alarms. It's going to be quite a spectacle, and you wouldn't normally expect it with a symphony.